Hello, I'm Tessa, and I'm here to discuss the extraordinary figure who was Mary Benson. Mary Benson was an astonishing LGBTQ figure from Victorian England who had a great connection to Wellington College as she was married to one of our early headmasters. I'm joined by Kitty, who will tell us more about the life of Mary.
Thanks, Tessa, and it's really great to be here. I'm really excited to talk about Mary Benson. If anyone knows Caroline Jones, she's the archivist here, and she told me about Mary Benson and lent me the book, The Impossible Life of Mary Benson by Rodney Bolt, which I sped through because it was so fascinating, and then reached out to Tessa to see if she would do this podcast with me, and here we are.
Mm-hmm. And before we get like deep into the events of her life, if Kitty, you could just set the scene for us and explain what kind of world Mary was living in? When was she born? Where did she grow up?
Yeah, so Mary was born 16th of March, 1841. So she lived in, I guess, what you would call Victorian England. And if we think about Victorian England, it was fairly prudish, kind of God-fearing. There was a lot of focus on religion, particularly Catholics and Protestants, a lot going on between them, and a lot of difference between the class system. So some people were living in extreme poverty and other people in like quite a lot of wealth. So Mary was born into a fairly well-off family and always lived sort of on the wealthier side of Victorian England.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. And could you tell us a bit about how Mary came to be married to Edward Benson?
So Mary was the only daughter in her family. She had older brothers, I believe. Edward White Benson was his full name. I think they were second cousins. Mm. So he was known to the family and he would come and visit. He was 12 years older than her. And actually when she was 12, he sort of proposed to her. He suggested to her mother that he thought she would make a good wife when mm-hmm. she was older, and had frequent correspondence with her mother as she grew up, indicating that he intended to marry her, which he did as soon as she was 18, pretty much bang on when she was 18, they got married.
Yeah, that's interesting, probably definitely unconventional to our modern world now.
Definitely now. I think even in those days,
it was a bit early.
Being proposed to at 12 was a bit early. I think Mary's mother was not the happiest with that, but there wasn't much you could do when a man had decided he wanted to marry your 12-year-old daughter.
Yeah, so we can sort of, we have an image of Mary being pushed into the arms of this man, not necessarily able to refuse, or indeed old enough to be really cognizant to refuse. So could you tell us a little bit about their married life?
Yeah, so I think that's really interesting what you said. And actually there's a quote in the book that says Mary sort of went from knowing only duty to her mother and then immediately duty to her husband. And she herself in her diaries says that she felt she never really had a childhood or had a chance to grow up. So they married young. They went and honeymooned in Europe. They went through Paris and Switzerland and the Alps. Mary actually talks of just being in floods of tears on the first night of their honeymoon in Paris, realizing sort of what a big deal it was to get married and how young she felt. And they then, they honeymooned through the summer I don't have the year right now.
I don't think it's that important.
They honeymooned through the summer and they came straight back to Wellington College. Mm-hmm. So Welly had just opened. Edward was chosen to be the very first master of Wellington College. And he had been here before the wedding, setting up the school, getting the master's lodge ready, recruiting the various masters and teachers for the school. Then they got married and went on their honeymoon. And as soon as they came back, they moved into the original master's lodge, which I believe is no longer standing here.
Yeah, it was bombed during the Second World War.
Yeah, I think there was one even before that.
Oh,
so they moved into this really small master's lodge. And then quite immediately after getting married, started having children, built the bigger Master's Lodge, which was the one that was then bombed in the war. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating the idea that Mary was spent such a vast amount of her life at this school. What do you think her experience here was?
This is the thing that really draws me to her. I find it so amazing that it feels like she lived in a completely different world in Victorian times, and yet she was right here where we all work and study and some of us live. So I know that the boys here, the boys at school, called her Mother Benji. I think they were quite terrified of Master Benson, but they loved his wife. Obviously, she was young. She was 18 when she moved here, so the same age as like some of you guys in the sixth form. She then went on to have to birth six children, all here at Wellington, all in the Master's Lodge. So she lived the like extent of her early life here at Wellington. And in the book and in her diaries, she talks about hiking through the heather, walking over to Yateley Manor, and her children playing on the moors and coming across residents of Broadmoor at the time. And they all grew up here, really. That's where she became a wife. She became a mother. She learned how to run a household. And she started having like many crushes on women, which I'm sure we'll get into. All of that for her started at Wellington.
And I think that brings us nicely onto one of the most like blatantly interesting parts of her life, which are her romantic affairs with women. So I think we should just get right into that. When did they start? Can you give us some details, some key figures?
Yeah, so that I suppose is the whole reason we're here, is that Mary lived a fairly ordinary life, apart from the fact that the whole time in her extensive diaries, she talks about being in love with various women. So when she was living here at Wellington, she was 25. I think she'd already had four or five of her children. And she fell in love with a woman called Emily Edwarders, who lived at Yateley Manor, which would have been like a walk for them across the moors to get there. She started calling these like crushes she would have on women Schwarmerin, excuse me, butchering the German there. So she would, she was fluent in languages, and she would often use German as sort of code words in her diaries. And this was the word she used for her crushes on women. Another sort of phrase she used a lot in her diaries was, "My God, what a woman." And she used that phrase when she had come across a woman that she was just completely taken aback by and fascinated with. So, by the time she was 25, she wrote about Emily, who she actually numbered as her crush number 39. So she was sort of making her way quite rapidly through crushes on women. And by the time she was 25, she was in love with Emily. She used to walk across the moors here from Wellington to Yateley, sometimes with two of her older children, just to hang out. And she talks about the great summers here, spending time with Emily, holding hands, basically being in love. But at that time, it would have just been considered a very intense friendship.
Yeah. And I think later in life, am I right in saying that she had more of these relationships, especially after her husband's death?
Yeah. So certainly her husband knew of her intense friendships with women, because when these crushes would happen, she would sort of neglect her wifely duties of running the household and keeping on top of accounts and telling the sort of housemaids what to do. And her husband would talk with her about her feelings and sort of remind her to stay close to God and what her duties as a wife were. With Edward's work, they sort of eventually moved on from Wellington. They lived in Lincoln for a while, and then they moved down to Cornwall, where he became the Archbishop of Truro, which was a pretty big deal at the time. He sort of went from a little nobody to quite a big person in the church. And when they were down there, she had another great crush on this woman who she nicknamed Tan. And again, Tan would talk very openly with Mary about her feelings for women. And although they sort of, it seems like were in love or kind of in a relationship, Tan would at the same time make Mary write diaries of all the crushes she'd ever had and kind of chastise herself in the diaries, saying how sinful it was and reminding her to be close to God and reminding her of her duties to her husband. And I think the writing from Mary at that time comes across as quite confused. Mm. Like she is having all these feelings, but she sort of thinks they're wrong. But at the same time, she writes something like, to feel a love like this, as strong as this, must be given from God. So she's sort of trying to align her ideas of religion and of God with her sexuality and how she's feeling towards women at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then let's put a pause on Mary Benson for a moment and talk about all her really interesting children, because it was an incredibly talented family. And I think Edward Benson, being like primarily an educator, really took steps to cultivate their talent. I read something that he'd only pass his children food at the dinner table if they requested it in rhyming couplets.
Yeah.
I think he was very much trying to like cultivate gifted children. So could you tell us about them?
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know whether he like between the two of them, they cultivated gifted children, or because both of them were quite intelligent, they just had naturally very intelligent gifted children, but they were quite the family. And like you say, they used to talk in rhyming couplets at the dinner table. The children, so there were six of them growing up. The oldest, Martin, died at age 19. But up until then, they were very close. They lived in a really remote, at the time, part of Cornwall after being at Wellington. And the children came up with something called the Saturday Magazine, which was never on Saturdays, but they each had to contribute a piece to the magazine, even the youngest child. And that would be sort of recipes, poems, short novels, that type of thing. I think all six of them were just obsessed with writing and words from a very young age, as were Edward and Mary. They were sort of a very well-read family who took their like huge library with them wherever they would move to. And all the children who survived childhood went on to do quite amazing things. So their second youngest son, Fred, who went by E.F. Benson, was quite a famous novelist at the time. Their oldest surviving son, Arthur, was also a novelist. He was in competition with Fred for who could write the most novels or who could write the best-selling novels. And their youngest son, Hugh, although he became a Catholic priest, which was sort of shocked the family because that was not their religion at the time, he also went on to become a novelist, sort of writing Catholic novels. And those three boys, when they grew up and became older, became quite close. And one time Mary challenged them to sort of write a spoof of each other's novels and each other's writing style, and they just went away in one evening and wrote sort of a short novel in the other brother's writing style, kind of taking the mickey out of it, which it's just quite a skill to have, I think. Yeah.
How did Mary end her life after her husband died? Mm. What became of her?
Yeah, so when her husband, like we've talked about them living in Cornwall, he was the Archbishop of Truro. He then was requested by Queen Victoria herself, I believe, to become the Archbishop of Canterbury, like the highest position you can hold. And they all moved to London. Mary sort of really came into her own when they moved to Lambeth Palace in London and was holding these fantastic dinner parties and banquets for sort of dozens of guests, and having really famous, influential people of the time come round and chat with her. I think a few years into being the Archbishop of Canterbury and working there, Edward sort of worked himself too hard and got very stressed and passed away. At that time, Mary was sort of left with nothing, no title, no precedence, no kind of lasting position in the world. So everything that the family had and had built was due to her husband and her husband's jobs and his career. And she had raised the children and sort of lived her own life and done a hell of a job of it, and yet had not been able to build a career because women just didn't really in those times. And so was left with nothing. Once she was just the widow of the Archbishop of Canterbury, that was it really. She had to go on and build her own life from there. She was at the time, we can kind of conceive now from her diaries, in a relationship with Lucy Tait, who actually was the daughter of the previous Archbishop of Canterbury. And so the two of them moved in together. She moved Lucy into the family home. They stayed in the same bed, in the same room for the rest of their lives together. And they sort of lived a fairly leisurely life in the countryside of Britain, occasionally holidaying to Egypt, because her daughter was quite a famous Egyptologist at the time. Sort of just taking long walks around the countryside, really, until Mary eventually passed away, at which her, shall we say, sort of partner, Lucy, at the time was not allowed to attend her bedside when she was ill or the funeral, and just was considered a family friend, despite the fact that they had shared a bed together for sort of the last 20 years or so of Mary's life. And then they actually have ended up buried next to each other. So they're sort of together forever, so to say. Yeah.
That's quite a heartwarming ending to what was definitely probably a very troubled life, given all the confusion that she must have been dealing with, given that she wasn't really permitted time to come into her own and really understand herself before she was married, and then had to deal with all her feelings whilst also juggling her husband and all her children and her relationship to her faith.
Yeah, and that's such a good way to put it. And Mary had like repeated episodes of depression and mental ill health, and often was sort of sent away on long holidays to recover. On these holidays, she would fall in love with women and have very intense relationships, and everybody would think she was recovered because she was happy again. And then she would come home to her six children, her role as a wife and a mother in kind of high society, and Edward, who could have quite a bad temper. Yeah. And of course, her mental health would just drop again because she wasn't really being able to live her true life or who she really was or who she really wanted to be, but not really knowing that, you know, nobody at that time really would have been able to, in her position, live any kind of outwardly gay life or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how do you think we can take the legacy of Mary Benson and implicate it in our life today, especially given us as Wellington students?
I think that's a really interesting question. I think when I read the story of Mary Benson, I was so immediately drawn to her. I feel such an affinity with her, being in the same place where she lived and sort of became a woman and kind of came into herself, her sort of formative years. It's so strange to walk the same path that she would have walked. She had like her first sort of relationship with a woman, Emily Edwardes, that we talked about, when she was 25, which was the same age I was when I had my first relationship with a woman, having also been in like a serious relationship with a man from a very young age, as she had been. And so I feel this great affinity with her, like I said. And I also feel, I touched on this a little bit in my chapel address for LGBT History Month, that I feel so lucky to be living in this time period. And I think we all should feel lucky, really, to be living in this time period, as opposed to Victorian England, because I was able to discover myself and my sexuality and sort of move from living the traditional kind of heterosexual life that I felt I should be living into more of my own life and doing what I wanted and dating who I wanted, even with a child. Mary wasn't able to do that. She, you know, had to stay true to her husband for his whole life and put on that image of this perfect family devoted mother. At one point, she even wrote that she'd rather die than have anyone think she was unhappy in her marriage to Edward, which obviously she was very unhappy in her marriage to Edward. So coming back to your point of, you know, what can we take from this story and what can we learn? I think it's important to think about the people who came before us that weren't able to have freedom and ownership over their own lives, particularly women, particularly people of the LGBT plus community, and that we are able to now have that sort of ownership and that freedom over our own lives and who we want to be and who we feel we really are, and to not forget that.
Yeah, completely. I think this conversation has been a really good symbol of the fact that we should always be looking to who came before us and uncovering their stories, because it's really important to appreciating where we are now and everything everyone has gone through to move on, to progress this far with LGBTQ rights and everything. And also heartening to give us the spirit to push even further, because things are still far from perfect.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I think that brings us to the end of this discussion of Mary Benson's life. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.